by transcription.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Sir Laurence Olivier, your host in Theatre Royal.
This is Laurence Olivier. Once again, it is my pleasure to introduce a good friend of mine from the theater and the story that he's chosen for your entertainment. As many of you will already know, I am at this time preparing for its London presentation a new play. But in a few weeks' time, I shall myself have the pleasure of appearing for you each week in various roles. Meantime, this week, I'm glad to tell you that my invitation has been accepted by an actor whose name will be familiar to you all, and who I am happy to count among my friends, John Gielgud. His work in the theatre, both in London and New York, will of course be familiar to you, and many of you will have seen him in the recent Hollywood film production of Julius Caesar. John has chosen a story which is among my own favourites, Max Beerbohm's The Happy Hypocrite. I myself will be setting the scene for you, and so here now is John Gielgud in the role of Lord George Hell in Max Beerbohm's Tale of England in Regency Days, The Happy Hypocrite. None, it is said, of all who reveled with the regent, was half so wicked as Lord George Hell. I will not trouble my listeners with a long recital of his great naughtiness, but it were well they should know that he was greedy, destructive, and disobedient. I'm afraid there is no doubt that he often sat up at Carlton House long after bedtime, playing at games, and that he generally ate and drank far more than was good for him. His fondness for fine clothes was such that he used to dress on weekdays quite as gorgeously as good people dress on Sundays. He was 35 years old and a great grief to his parents. And the worst of it was that he set such a bad example to others.
Lord George Hell!
Why, yes, here comes George Hell. Gad, there's a buck for you.
Oh, how wicked my lord is looking. Fie, they say it is quite unsafe for a lady to be in the same room with him.
I've known ladies make for the door as soon as he entered, but they generally pause to watch him through the keyhole.
I vow you're as teased, my lord. Heavens, he's coming this way.
Led by the twinkling candles of your eyes, my dear.
I vow I shall die.
Good evening, my lord. I hardly expected to see you at such a tedious function.
Noblesse oblige, my dear fellow. His Royal Highness was good enough to command me.
May I present your lordship to my Lady Jane Windermere?
Your slave, madam. I am happy that the season has brought you up to town.
It is all such a mad whirl, my lord, after the peaceful calm of the countryside.
A fool's paradise, madam, if you'll pardon me.
But surely, my lord, you would not deny the ennobling influences of trees and flowers or the English lakes.
Quite unknown to me, madam. I've not seen a buttercup for 20 years.
Yet I fancied you had come into an estate in Hertfordshire, my lord. Follard Chase.
Oh, why, to be sure. I won it off Sir Follard, followed by a chuck of the dice at Boodle's. Not that I ever dream of going there.
They tell me the baronet lost every penny he had to you.
True, sir. The fellow was ruined.
And you then refused him his revenge, I hear. Surely, my lord, that was unkind.
Unkind, sir? Why, when I'd won his mansion off him, didn't I offer to install him in the lodge?
And did he accept?
After a little hesitation, he did. On my soul, the man's place is a sinecure. He never even has to open the gate to me.
Now, my lord, I vow you're a thief.
What's more, my lord, I have even heard it whispered that the dice you were playing with were loaded.
I've never been at pains to deny the rumor, my dear fellow. Everybody knows that I cheat, but nobody has the effrontery to tax me with it to my face.
Indeed, I've heard it asserted that you never sit down to a game of limbo with less than 4 aces up your sleeve, my lord.
I have had as many as 7, sir.
Oh, I wonder that you are tolerated at all, my lord. But didn't I see you at Garble's the other evening with that celebrated dancer on your arm, La Signora Gambogi?
Ah, you'll see me there again tomorrow. They tell me there's a merry little dwarf whose debut will be quite an occasion. Also, a new singer who is to open in The Fair Maid of Samarkand. I shall be there to pay my homage.
Love, Lord, I vow.
Oh.
Sagittaro, bravo.
You are in a good humor tonight, my friend, no?
Uncommonly. Last night I had the good fortune to relieve His Royal Highness of another 5,000 guineas. Oh, there's our merry little dwarf again. Bravo, Sagittaro. Bravo. Garble.
Coming, my lord.
Champagne, Garble, another bottle of port. I'll have that little homuncule, the merry dwarf yonder, come here to my box. I wish to compliment him on his skill as an archer and pledge him in a bumper of the grape.
Oh, my lord, it's too kind. I will send him immediately.
A clever little dwarf, if ever I saw one. Did you mark how accurately he shot his arrows, even when the scarf was tied across his eyes, and how he pierced the waxen figure through the heart?
Take care he does not pierce you to the heart, my friend. I think I have seen the dwarf before, somewhere.
A merry little dwarf, on my soul. He's quite taking my fancy with his fooling. Why, and here he is. Gilded bow, arrows, and all.
Your servant, my lord.
On my soul, you have a genius for the bow. Come and sit down by me. But first, let me present you to my divine companion, the Signora Gambogi. Virgo and Sagittarius again.
To the health of your lordship.
And by what means, or miracle, did you acquire your mastery of the bow?
By long practice. Long practice on human creatures.
Oh, on my heart, you'd be dangerous in a quarrel. Let me hear the music of that bowstring once again.
As your lordship commands. This time, I will shoot at the stars.
Bravo, bravo, Sagittaro. Huh? You're dangerous company.
Your lordship would certainly be a good target.
He is certainly a fat one.
But look, here comes the new thingamalord. Jenny Mere is the fair captain of Samarkand. I commend her to your favor.
Entrancing.
I do not think she is very much. She is not at all pretty.
She is entrancing. What beauty. What innocence.
My lord, you are hurt?
A sudden twinge in my heart. Oh. But where's our little dwarf? He must have flown away. Trouble. She's entrancing. I must positively be presented.
If your lordship deign to wait the conclusion of her humble toilet. Ah, I hear her footfall on the stair. Miss Mere, come hither. Miss Mere, this is my Lord George Hell, who's been graciously pleased.
Miss Mere, listen, I pray you, to my poor words, nor spurn me in misprision from the pedestal of your beauty, genius, and virtue. All too conscious, alas, of my presumption in the same, I yet abase myself before you as a suitor for your adorable hand. I grope under the shadow of your raven locks and dazzle in the light of those translucent orbs, your eyes.
Sir.
Say, my lord.
My lord, I thank you for your words. They are beautiful. But indeed, I can never be your bride.
Oh, child, let not the sun rise ere you have retracted those wicked words.
My wealth, my rank, my irremediable love for you, I throw them at your feet. I would wait an hour, a week, a lustre, even a decade, did you but bid me hope.
I can never be your wife. I can never be the wife of any man whose face is not saintly. Your face, my lord, mirrors, it may be, true love for me. But it is even as a mirror long tarnished by the reflection of this world's vanity. It is even as a tarnished mirror. Do not kneel to me, for I am poor and humble. I was not made for such impetuous wooing. Kneel, if you please, to some greater, gayer lady. As for my love, it is my own, nor can it ever be torn from me. But given as true love must needs be given, freely. Rise from your knees. That man whose face is wonderful, as are the faces of the saints, to him will I give my true love. Good night, my lord.
Miss Mere, I beg you. She's gone.
If your lordship pleases to rise from his knees, I...
Oh, thank you, Garble, thank you.
Oh, so there you are, my friend, and how ridiculous you look. Come, it is time you were going.
No, I cannot. Goodbye.
But, George...
I will call the signora's carriage.
Whither shall I go? My past life swims before me, shallow and artificial as the lake at Garble. Shall I drown myself? There will be no one left in the gardens now to prevent me, and in the morning they will find me floating there, one of the noblest of love's victims. Dawn at last. How many weary miles have I wandered this endless night? Three at the very least, for these must be the woods of Kensington. How cool the country is. It seems to cool the feverish maladies of my soul and to consecrate my love. Only now, in the fair light of the dawn, do I begin to see the means of winning my adorable Jenny. Only now, as the sun wakes up the beauties of the countryside, with her I shall always live in the country. But to win her, I must return to the maelstrom of the town. There is only one man that can help me, Aeneas, the mask maker of Old Bond Street. Woodman!
Morning, sir.
I'm lost in these woods. Tell me the way to London.
London, sir? Yonder pathway will take you there, sir. Keep straight on. I can't miss it, sir.
Thank you, honest woodman. Thank you a thousand times.
Good morning, Mr. Aeneas.
Good morning, Julius. A warm and sunny day. Now, this morning, I want you to put the finishing touches to the Mask of Barbarossa.
Yes, Mr. Aeneas. Who's it for, Mr. Aeneas?
None of your business, Julius, but it is for the young king of Zarenburg. He is to wear it at his coronation next week. Now, get on with it.
Yes, Mr. Aeneas.
La Signora Gambogi across the way. Seems lost in thought this morning. Never even acknowledged me bow. Aha! Here comes her inamorato, Lord George Hell himself. And with a little posy of wildflowers. But no, he's coming here. Good morning, my lord.
Good morning, Aeneas. I want the mask of a saint.
The mask of a saint, my lord, certainly. With or without halo?
Without halo.
Certainly. His Grace, the Bishop of St. Albans, always wears his with a halo, but not for your lordship. Now, if your lordship will allow me to take his measurements.
Measurements? But I must have the mask today. Have you none ready made?
Ah, I see. Required for immediate wear. You see, your lordship takes a rather large size, but I think... Julius!
Sir?
Bring me the saint's mask we made for Mr. Ripsby a couple of years ago.
Yes, sir?
Mr. Ripsby only had it on her, my lord. I fancy it is just what your lordship would wish. Spiritual and yet handsome.
Is it a mask that is even as a mirror of true love?
It was made precisely as such. In fact, it was made for Mr. Ripsby to wear at his silver wedding and was very highly praised by the relatives of Mrs. Ripsby. Thank you, Julius. Will your lordship step into my little room and... Now, then, is the expression exactly as your lordship would wish?
I wish it were more as a perfect mirror of true love. It's too calm, too contemplative.
Easily remedied. These eyebrows, just a shade closer together. Like that. Slightly fuller curve to the lips. So, there.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And how long does your lordship wish to wear the mask?
I must wear it until I die.
Oh. Kindly be seated, then, I pray. For I'm to ply the mask with great care. Warm the inner side of the mask over the lamp, Julius, if you please.
Yes.
And now, if your lordship will permit me this pomade. Yes. That's better, I think. Mask is warm.
Yes.
Thank you. Now, powder the inner side. So. And now, my lord, keep quite still for me.
Yes.
There. Does that feel quite comfortable?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Now, please, look in the mirror, my lord.
But I do look like a saint.
I am proud to have served your lordship. That will be 50 guineas.
Thank you, Aeneas. Thank you a thousand times. Thank you, Aeneas. Thank you a thousand times. The face of a saint. Yes, but what does it cover? Should I not be ashamed so to cheat the girl that I love? Behind this fair mask there lurks Curious, the Gamboge waiting for me.
Why, George, but what a change. So you have taken to wearing a mask?
Madam,
But I cannot let go so handsome a lover, even though he spurns me. Do not spurn me, George. Give me your posy of wild flowers. Why, you never looked so lovingly at me in all your life.
Madam, I have not the honor to know you.
Oh, yes, you have, my friend. You have the honor to know me very well. And you will know me better still before very long.
So here, beside this tiny stream, I have found peace at last. Peace from all but my thoughts. These waters, which mirror within themselves the mask which has become my life, are not their murmurs a reproach? Though she be taken with my looks, behind that mask still lurks the evil face that so repels my dear. Yet may that mask itself not be a secret symbol of my true repentance and my love. My face was evil because my life was evil. Since I have seen her beauty, my soul has changed.
My lord.
Who is there hiding in the bushes?
Only your merry little dwarf, my lord. But look, there on the further bank. Have you no eyes for her?
Heavens, tis she. Will she not know me?
No, my lord. But she will love you.
Oh, I have disturbed you.
Never. Without you, I am as nothing.
Surely you are that good man, whose features are the features of a saint, for whom I have waited so long. Oh, therefore, do not kneel to me. But rise and suffer me to kiss your hand. For my love of you is lowly, and my heart is all yours.
Nay, you are my queen, and I must needs kneel in your presence.
Oh, no, no. Then I shall kneel with you.
Beloved.
Beloved.
This posy of wild flowers, they are for you. I gathered them for you hours ago in this very wood. See, they are not withered.
How was it for me that you gathered them, though you had never seen me?
I gathered them for you, knowing I should soon see you. How was it that you, who had never seen me, yet waited for me?
I waited, knowing I should see you at last. Come. Beautiful in this wood. Which do you like the best? Primroses? Or lady's feet? Or forget-me-nots?
I know the names of no flowers, my dear.
Is it worldly and wrong of me to have loved the flowers? Ought I to have thought more of those higher things that are unseen? Surely the flowers are good. And did you not gather this posy for me? But if you do not love them, I must not. And I will try to forget their names. For I must try to be like you in all things.
Love the flowers always, and teach me to love them.
Every day I have come to this wood because I was lonely, and it seemed to pity me. But now I have you, and it is glad.
I too came here once, last night.
Last night? Oh, will you try not to be angry with me if I tell you something? It is something which will seem dreadful to you.
Pauvrette, you cannot have anything very dreadful to tell.
Oh, I am very poor. And every night I sing in a theater. It is the only thing I can do to earn my bread. Do you despise me because I sing?
Do you like singing?
In the theater? I hate it. I hate it indeed. Yet tonight, alas, I must go back there.
You need never sing in a theater again. I am rich and I'll pay them to release you.
Oh.
You shall sing only for me. Sweetheart, it cannot be much more than noon. Let's go into the town while there's time, and you shall be my bride, and I your bridegroom this very day. Why should you and I be lonely?
Oh, I do not know. I often used to envy the woodman living in that dear little cottage there on the edge of the wood.
Let us live there, then.
You are so good that you can deny yourself all the vanity and pleasure that most people love. Otherwise,
my love, there's something that you want that I can give you. Tell me, I beg you. Anything in the whole wide world.
If we are going to get married,
We will pass a pastry shop in Kensington Village. Should you think me greedy, if I wanted a bun?
By the way, I wonder what's happened to Lord George Hell. Seems an age since last we saw him at Boodle's.
Boodle's or Garble's? Come to think of it, I haven't seen him since that little singer vanished. Had the lead in the Fair Captive of Samarkand and vanished after the first night. George Hell had been after her, I heard tell, but Garble told me she would have none of him, or I'd have thought they must have eloped.
And what had Garble to say about her disappearance?
Said he'd been compensated for it, but that he was sure she'd not succumbed to his lordship. In fact, he said he'd rejected him soundly.
The most astonishing thing is that he should have restored all the money he had won at cards. Even his Royal Highness has been repaid. And old Sir Follard is back in his old home.
A very queer business indeed. I've heard it said that he was seized with a sudden repentance and fled overseas to a foreign monastery. Maybe he's even dead.
Well, peace to his ashes in whatever urn they may be resting.
This waxen mask, though it has been the means of my happiness, is it not still a barrier between me and my bride? Though it is sweet to kiss her through it, to watch her through it with loving eyes, it's remained a mockery that I must wear for the rest of my life. No longer do I even feel it jarring on my face, the evil face that it covers, the face of my past. It's become a very part of me, and for all its rigidity, at least it expresses the one emotion that fills and suffuses me, true love.
My love?
Dearest?
Look at this little pagoda I have built with all our buns. Is it not pretty? Oh, dear, it has tumbled down. Oh, dear husband, why do you not smile at my folly? Your grave face rebukes me. Smile, or I shall think I vex you. Please smile a little.
My dear one, I cannot. I find my lips will not curve into a smile. However much amused I may be, love of you has bound them in a spell.
But I can laugh, though I love you. I do not understand.
Ah, my dear, if only I could smile. If only I could show you all the fondness which is locked in me and all the smiles and happiness with which you fill my soul. Someday, perhaps, you will tire of my monotonous gravity. Someday... But, Jenny, what is it? Why do you look so frightened?
There is a strange woman smiling at me across the palings. I do not know her. There, behind you. She is nodding to me. I think she's foreign, for she has an evil face.
Do not notice her. Does she look evil? I do not wish to look.
Very evil and very dark. She has a pink parasol. Her teeth are like ivory.
Do not notice her. Think. It is the anniversary of our wedding, dear.
I wish she would not smile at me. Her eyes are like bright blocks of ink.
Let us eat our beautiful buns.
Oh, she's coming in. George, forbid her to come in. I'm afraid.
Pray, pardon me. I could not mistake the back of so old a friend.
Oh, you found me at last.
But of course, how nice to see you again, even though your face has changed so marvelously.
Madam, begone, I command you, from this garden. I do not see what good is to be served by the renewal of our acquaintance.
Acquaintance? Surely we were friends, rather. Nor is my esteem for you so dead that I would crave estrangement.
Madam, you see me happy, living very peacefully with my bride.
To whom I beseech you, old friend, present me.
I would not desecrate her sweet name by speaking it with so infamous a name as yours.
Your collar hurts me, old friend. I shall compose myself, if you will forgive me. I may sit down.
Jenny, then please retire, pending this lady's departure. Go into the cottage, my love.
I am less frightened by your side. Do not send me away.
Suffer her pretty presence. Indeed, I am come this long way from the town that I may see her no less than you, George. Come and sit by me, little bride, for I have things to tell you. Are you expecting guests, George? And by the way, your wife's mask is even better than yours.
Oh. What does she mean? Oh, send her away.
Serpent, crawl from our Eden, ere you poison with your venomous fairest denizen.
Even my pride knows certain bounds. I have been very forbearing, but even in my zeal for friendship, I will not be called a serpent. I will indeed be gone from this rude place. Yet ere I go, there is a boon I will deign to beg. Show me. Show me but once again the dear face I have so often caressed. The
no.
lips that were dear to me.
No, no.
What does she mean?
Bid him unmask for me, little bride. Intercede for me. You have more authority over him than I. Doff his mask with your own finger.
George, please tell me. What does she mean? What does she mean?
If you do not go now of your own will, I must drive you, man though I am, violently from the garden.
Doff your mask and I am gone.
Leave me no alternative, madam. Come.
False saint, and I will unmask you!
Like a panther, she sprang upon him and clawed at his waxen cheeks. There was a loud pop, as though some great cork had been withdrawn, and La Gamboge recoiled. She had torn away the mask. It lay before her upon the lawn, upturned to the sky. George stood motionless. La Gamboge stared up into his face, and her dark flush died swiftly away. For there, staring back at her, was the man she had unmasked, but lo, his face was even as his mask had been. Line for line, feature for feature, it was the same. Twas the same face.
Madam, your cheek may well blanch when you regard the ruin you have brought upon me. Nevertheless, do I pardon you. The gods have avenged through you the imposture I wrought upon one who is dear to me. For that unpardonable sin, I am punished. As for my poor bride, whose love I stole by the means of that waxen semblance, of her I cannot ask pardon. Ah, Jenny, Jenny, do not look at me. Turn your eyes from the foul reality that I dissembled.
Dear husband, look at me. I do not understand. Why did you woo me under a mask? And why do you imagine that I could love you less dearly, seeing your own face? Look into my eyes.
But Jenny, my face, it has become the same.
Surely your face is even dearer to me, even fairer than the semblance that hid it and deceived me. I am not angry. It was well that you veiled from me the full glory of your face, for indeed I was not worthy to behold it too soon. But I am your wife now. Let me look always at your own face. Let the time of my probation be over. Kiss me with your own lips.
My love, I have grown worthy of you.
This is Laurence Olivier again. I'm sure you would like to join with me in my thanks to John Gielgud for his interpretation of the role of Lord George Hell in Max Beerbohm's The Happy Hypocrite. In next week's program, my guest will be another good friend of mine, and I think of yours too, Robert Donat. I look forward to the pleasure of your company. Until then, au revoir, and thank you.
Laurence Olivier introduced, as usual, today's transcribed program. The script was by D.G. Brightson. The music was under the direction of Sidney Torch. Theater Royal is an NBC presentation produced and directed by Harry Allen Towers.
Hear exciting Last Man Out tonight on the NBC Radio Network.